all of our messaging was getting deleted. So no one had a chance to understand what was actually going on. So I don't blame the individuals for not understanding, but I'm pretty upset with the politicians and the media companies that allowed this to happen, and especially the mainstream media companies that just completely stopped doing good journalism and took the side of, you know, what would bring them the most readers and the most money. And it's despicable.
Welcome to the Business Ownership Podcast, brought to you by Awareness Strategies, helping you navigate the waters between entrepreneurship and ownership. Hey there, peeps. This is Michelle Nedelec, and I'm super glad that you're here with us today because I'm here with my most amazing guest, Rob. Rob, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Pleasure to be here, Michelle.
Awesome. So give everybody the highlight of who you are and what you do for business.
I am Rob Driscoll, and I am founder and president of Big Media LTD, which ironically is the name of a little startup, but we're 2.5 years old now. And I would argue that we are the most accurate source of news on the big issues anywhere on this planet.
Nice. So tell tales. How did you get into that as your thing?
Well, I've been running a business magazine for much of the last 23 years. And when COVID came along, I put that business, which was being restructured at the time, to be a hybrid marketing agency and magazine, which is what it is now. We just relaunched. But while I was taking a break from that, I found that I had time to write suddenly, and I started writing very common sense, logical posts about COVID-19, which really was an amazing experience because I would write about 300 words of truth and get attacked by hundreds of people, and then LinkedIn would delete it, and then Facebook would delete it, and Twitter would delete it, and so we just what I discovered was that there was a lot of hysteria, and somebody needed to launch a media company where the truth would not get deleted and where I could actually talk about very important, literally life and death issues without having my messages deleted.
Wow. So one, freedom of speech. You should have the right to simply say your opinion anyways. I mean, if people posting cats playing piano can post their stuff, why can't you? Is my opinion, especially if it's not, you know, racist, or it's not, you know, promoting KKK and the Nazis. Anything short of that, we're still, I would assume, well, no, we're not still. And I say we're not still because the Canadian government actually passed a bill legislating that they can control the narrative and the conversation that's going on right now. And it's not just about the KKK and the Nazis. It is anything that they deem inappropriate. In fact, you can't share any news articles on Facebook anymore in Canada. So it is not simply mass hysteria. It is not conspiracy theorism. It is an actual fact that we cannot share news articles on Facebook in Canada right now based on this law. So for those of you who aren't aware of that and you're listening to this, because we do have an international audience, which I'm very proud of, and we do believe in freedom of expression. So to back up the bus a bit, why would you hey, people are bashing me in public. This is awesome. I think I'll do it every day. what would possess you to do that?
Well, I've always found that the truth eventually wins out, and if you stick to the high road, that while you might take some lumps along the way, eventually it feels pretty darn good and things work out. And so when I launched a platform and started sharing my articles on social media channels, I was being called everything. A lot of people called me a murderer for spreading lies, and I made a pledge to myself to never insult anyone back. So I took a lot of heat, and all I dished out in return were a bunch of data tidbits and logic. So I would just calmly say, well, in the post that I shared, there's a link to the data, which is from your government or from the US government. And we're not making up information here, but we are not sensationalizing. We are actually just telling you the truth in a very logical, straightforward way. And people weren't used to it. And of course, they're being told by medical officials and the media at that time that COVID was the scariest thing in the world and we needed to shut down, and you know, that whole lockdown and vaccinate. There's still a lot of people who think it was the right thing to do, but it had a devastating effect on our collective health, and also the education, especially of young children. Like, I was just talking to a gentleman about this and how there's a noticeable lag with these kids who had a few years where they didn't have much interaction and they were out of school, and these are big things, and that's just one aspect that was not being looked at. And I started talking about these issues, and you know, one of the first articles I wrote about COVID was, the headline was "Saving Businesses Saves Lives," and talking about the correlation between people who are out of work and suicide. But nobody, the media and the medical officials and the politicians, were all just having fun. I guess some people would have enjoyed it, but they were just completely focused on COVID and saving grandpa, who in most cases, I would argue, was ready to go anyway. And so we, at big media, and believe me, not everybody was on my side in terms of my team and how they looked at the lockdown and how they looked at vaccines, but they are all almost all of them are scientists, and they're all top professionals who have a very high standard in terms of their work. And as they did the research, they found out some amazing things. And you know, now it's become quite clear that our policies toward the lockdowns and the vaccination were terribly counterproductive, and a lot of young people died because of these terrible policies.
Well, and the policies here weren't the same as they were all around the world either. I see a lot of people going, wow, like, why are you still talking about this? I'm like, because we just got out of it a few months ago, and technically it's been maybe over a year now. But a lot of places, especially in the States, didn't have anywhere near the ramifications that we did here. So talk to me a bit about what was going on here, just so that people can understand the extent of the governmental reach that was going on here.
Well, just the fact that the government was essentially coercing people to take a vaccine that had not been proven safe. And I, you know, I can send
that anybody alone.
Yeah. That's just, okay. It's also absurd. And for a healthy person like me to even consider taking any of these new COVID drugs, it was just a no brainer. And however, you know, I was demonized, and everybody in that vaccine reluctant group was treated like, a subspecies at that time. And, you know, with our news platform, we found that we could actually end a lot of the arguments and help people understand what was actually going on. And there are still people who completely believe that the government was working on our best interest, and that, you know, these people deserve the Nobel Prize for coming up with these COVID vaccines that save millions of, well, that's all just garbage. And I'm not saying that our articles show you, you know, unequivocally that the vaccine did this, because there's so many nuances to all of this. But what our articles do is just help people understand critical context surrounding these issues. So if you look at articles written by Lori Weston, for example, she's an amazing writer and an amazing data scientist, and she didn't have any axe to grind. She just went into it to educate people and was totally shocked by the death data she was seeing and what people were actually dying from. And it wasn't COVID. It was all kinds of other things. And that continued throughout the pandemic. And so our reaction and public policies were tremendously counterproductive. And the data shows that. And some people would say, well, hindsight is 2020, and you got lucky, Rob. And no, I didn't talk until I'd done the research. And when you looked at the numbers at that time, and saw, you know, who was actually having severe reactions to the infection, it was a very small portion of the population that was, most of the people who died, the vast majority had multiple comorbidities and were elderly. Now, I'm not saying we don't want to help those people live longer, but when you come up with policies that dramatically affect lives of young people, that's just doesn't make any sense. So on our platform, we just help people understand the context around issues like, and it's not just COVID, we cover climate change related issues and energy transition and all the big issues we will tackle in some way. And we don't sensationalize it. It might sound like it the way I talk, because I get pretty fired up, but when children's lives are at stake, you better believe I'm going to be fired up about it. And ultimately it is still important that we talk about these things, because we could be hit by another wave of COVID, and we could be hit by another wave of stupid government policies. And so these discussions we need to look back, and everybody who was wrong about COVID, and that's the vast majority of people, doesn't want to talk about it, but they need to realize what went wrong. And a big part of it was the censorship that you alluded to earlier. The Biden government was actually pressuring the social media platforms to delete the truthful content. They called it disinformation, but it was anything that was counter to the common sense theories, like that the virus COVID started in the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Now, that just makes sense, because that's where the whole thing started, in Wuhan. Well, is it a coincidence that the lab is right there? No, it's where it came from. And it started from there. And the government was involved. And unfortunately, the social media platforms bowed to the pressure. I'm sure some of it was done on their own accord as well. And so you had a large percentage of the Western population brainwashed into thinking that this was how we needed to go, because people like me who were actually publishing the truth, all of our messaging was getting deleted. So no one had a chance to understand what was actually going on. So I don't blame the individuals for not understanding, but I'm pretty upset with the politicians and the media companies that allowed this to happen, and especially the mainstream media companies that just completely stopped doing good journalism and took the side of, what would bring them the most readers and the most money. And it's despicable.
Well, let's talk about it from a business perspective for a bit, because I think it's tremendously important that, one, in this day and age, you are essentially starting a business without the capacity to have social media to back it. Because if everything you're putting up on social media is getting shut down, you don't have that. How do you build a business despite the lack of ability to be able to use the systems? And the day may come when somebody just can't access it because it's too expensive, and may not be able to access it because they decide, okay, we're not putting advertising up anymore. Whatever their reason is, I think people need to understand that where there's a will, there's a way. So how are you running a business without the advantage of that on your side?
Well, thankfully, the social media companies have sort of wakened up to the problems with what they were doing, and the damage that was created by deleting the truth and demonizing the most intelligent people on the subject. And I'm not saying I'm one of those, but there are many real experts who were being silenced from the beginning. And it's really important that people realize that. I was banned from LinkedIn for 18 days, I think it was. And I did a lot of complaining, believe me. And I know other people who are still banned from LinkedIn for talking about the truth. And LinkedIn, to their, to their credit, they've actually stopped deleting truthful stories about the lockdown and the vaccine injuries and so on. So they did say that one more by me and I would be permanently banned. But thankfully, as I say, they've come around, and Facebook doesn't attach warnings whenever I do a post now like they used to. And so it is getting better, and the pendulum is swinging. Like I got attacked relentlessly when we first launched Big Media in February of 2021. And now, you know, I don't think I've had anyone insult me in months, which is so nice. And just about every day, somebody sends me a note or comments on a post just saying, thanks for doing what you're doing. And it really is changing, and people are realizing that they got duped. And they have to realize it's not their fault. I mean, if they were jerks to their family and their friends, they should go apologize to them. but I understand why it happened, because they did not have access to the truth. So they just heard one side of the story. They believed that their family was in danger from people like me who chose, for very, very good reasons, to not get any of the COVID vaccines. They were literally scared of us because they were convinced that we were dangerous, even though we were taking the logical, rational path. And most of the people I know, like, for example, a lot of beach volleyball players in my community, decided not to get vaccinated. None of them had problems when they got COVID, but I know so many people who had to go to the hospital right after getting the shot. And that's just a simple fact. And it, you know, the data is there too. And there are so many disturbing numbers. And what the politicians and medical officials are remarkably still doing, keep in mind that the BC government is still not allowing unvaccinated health professionals to come back. Even though they're crying about a labor shortage, they are not letting probably many of the best people come back. And it's so absurd, but it's still happening. And these, you know, they're still advertising to get the shots, and they generalize, and they use these big numbers saying, you know, however many million people died from COVID, so you got to get the shot. Well, if of course the medical officials and the politicians aren't going to go into the weeds about the details. They just want to influence you and manipulate you, and so they don't give you critical context. They don't say that it is actually crazy for any healthy person to even think about getting any of the COVID shots. Like there is zero reason to do it, and many, many, many reasons not to do it. Now there's an argument that, you know, if you have bad lungs, bad heart, maybe it can help prolong your life a little bit. But these things, unfortunately, the critical context, it's hard to find. And that is why I started Big Media, and why I work hard every day to spread the word, and hope that you know, people can make intelligent decisions about these big issues, including climate change, which is the next big thing that people are being told to fear for their lives and run for the hills and watch for the rising seas or the rising boiling seas, by the way. And it's again, it's absurd. And the same principles are at play. Yes, there was a virus. Yes, COVID was a really nasty virus that really preyed on people who were unwell. Climate change is a thing, but most people don't understand that it's a natural process, and it's hard to tell how much impact humans have had, but it's nowhere near the impact that they're being told by the environmental leaders and politicians, who are again trying to make people be scared to the point where they'll actually vote for these people and donate to those people. And it's such a racket. And climate alarmism, just in the same way that COVID policies hurt and ultimately caused much more damage than if we would have just, you know, told everybody to wash their hands and not breathe on people. In the same way, climate alarmism is causing all kinds of damage. We're putting so much money and energy into silly things like the shopping bag that, you know, is just a tiny little fraction of the plastic that's in every store. We focus on that. We focus on plastic straws that actually the replacements are causing more emissions than the plastic straws did in the first place. And so it's and then there's the Pacific, the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is a bunch of garbage, literally. It actually isn't even a thing. And there are countless people who have donated lots of money to, you know, help people, you know, tackle this big garbage problem in the Pacific Ocean. Well, most people don't understand that it's not detectable. They haven't, oceanographers have been looking for this for a long time. It's not detectable from NASA satellites. And so I care a lot about the environment. I have 7 children. I want them to have a good future. I want their kids to have a good future. But having everybody scared and putting all their energy and money into the wrong things is not only counterproductive, it's just sad.
Right. Well, I know there's definitely a problem with plastic in the ocean, because I can't tell you, just going on holidays over the last, you know, 25 years. I mean, I did it long before it became a thing. Was we just go and grab a garbage bag and go and clean up the shoreline, because inevitably, you know, floods come in, floods go out, and garbage is going to be somewhere. We are human. And I think there is definitely a place for the conversation to happen, but conversations can't happen in a one-way tube. And I think that therein lies the biggest problem, is if we're not having a two-way conversation, then it renders the conversation moot. So I was doing some research on a current event that I just wanted to see what was going on with it. And when I looked it up, I could only find Box Media, whatever you want to call it, traditional media, announcing their perspective on it. And I specifically looked up the names of magazines and newspapers and other things where I thought, okay, I just want to see what their journalists think. And I could not get it. So again, looking at the business of this is, how do you build a independent newspaper when clearly the powers that be are not wanting the voice of independence to be heard?
Well, it's hard work. But as I said, it's getting better. The social media platforms are no longer suppressing my material. In fact, they seem to be appreciating it. And, wow. And so it's getting better all the time. And I mean, it seems really ridiculous for me to say this, but I challenge anybody to go back over the last 400 articles that we've produced and find anything that was wrong. If they prove that something is wrong, like we've made a mistake in our data or whatever, I'll change it. I'll apologize publicly. We, even though I make these bold claims, we do have intellectual humility at the very core of our business model. And we want people to scrutinize our material. And so back to your point, like, how's it going to happen? Well, we are sticking our noses out there, and I'm putting my stories into places like in echo chambers on social media where people just are posting all kinds of things that are wrong. And I'll just politely go in there and just say, hey, you guys, you might want to read this article. You know, it's not quite as it seems sometimes. And so by really sticking to material that is fact-based, where we're very transparent, we show all the data where it comes from, and we stick to logic and we don't sensationalize, more and more people are realizing that it's an elevated form of journalism that helps empower people. So some people are going to be turned off by what I've said already with lockdowns, vaccination, climate change, but you know, all we do are we print facts, and we love it when people try to prove us wrong, and it'll happen sometime where I'll make a retraction, we had a mistake, and I did a big announcement that you know, COVID was actually in the top 10 of when we first published the article on COVID death data. COVID was not in the top 10 causes of death of women between 60 and 69. And the truth is, after Lori noticed an issue in her own article that was because of a data entry error by the Alberta government, that once that data entry was fixed, then COVID was actually the number 10 And this will blow people's minds. Women aged 60 to 69 in the first year of the pandemic, COVID was the 10th highest, like number 10 cause of death. Whereas most people on the street would think it would have been number one or number two. And anyway, so we want people to scrutinize us. We want people to scrutinize other media people. We are growing, and we've got a lot of very influential people who understand the importance of what we're doing. And because we've helped people all the way through the last 3 years understand important principles behind what we're talking about, like climate change. Like if you read the articles from Laurie Weston and Brad Hayes, he's a doctor of geology, focusing on emissions and energy transition and fundamental truths. Like we're not out there denying that humans are not doing bad things to the environment. We would never say that. But we want people to actually understand what is going on and that there isn't an existential climate crisis upon us. The crisis is the lies and the manipulation that go on. And the manipulative tactics don't work if we have an empowered populace. If they are knowledgeable about these issues, they won't be scared into making bad decisions and backing terrible policies. The politicians won't even try those stupid policies if they know they're going to get kicked around in the media for doing so, because the public will understand these principles better. So that's ultimately my goal, is empowering people with practical knowledge. And it feels great. Like the first article I read from Brad Hayes on sea level rise, I didn't understand much at all. I knew a little bit about lunar pole and tides, very little. But Brad just in a 14 minute read helped me completely understand what's going on with sea level rise. And it just takes one really intelligent, high integrity scientist explaining these really important fundamental principles to really, it's like taking a university degree in 14 minutes.
Thanks. Well, and it's always been kind of an intellectual luxury to debate and deliberate and have intellectual conversations. Once upon a time, we didn't have access to the white papers, and they would bore most people to tears anyways. But I think it is important that we have news available to us that isn't sensationalized, that isn't just rah-rah, sis-boom-bah, that there's actually some information in there that allows people to have conversations. And one of the things that I like particularly is people who understand the concepts having a conversation at a grade 9, grade 6 vocabulary level, so that everybody can get in on the conversation. And I think that's immensely important, because if we keep the intellectual knowledge and, you know, the Harvard Review and where people are kind of hobnobbing on their $25 words, it doesn't allow for people to be empowered to have those conversations. So when it comes to kind of making information public, if you will, what kind of steps are you guys taking to make sure that people have access to this and that they're not just stuck kind of watching the free television news that's going on and whatever?
Yeah, well, part of our mandate is actually to have events as well to help people get the message who might want to actually ask some questions and hear a little more detail. And so we'll be going across the country and talking about the big issues and having a Q&A afterwards. So people, and we've had a number of these events already, and it's amazing how we blow people's minds with simple truths. And we don't talk like Conrad Black. You don't have to bring your dictionary, when you're reading an article. So we these are incredibly brilliant scientists. Like I think just about half of them are PhDs, but they're all brilliant. But they don't write like they're better than everybody. They write in a way that is designed to educate the populace, not just educate their buddies or show off to their buddies. We write in a way that you know, a grade six student can read something, and you know, a PhD person, Lori Weston, I've mentioned her too many times. She's going to give me heck for that, but she wrote a, yeah, we do. She wrote a 3-part series on science that like a lot of scientists from across North America commented on and just said, wow, you know, that was amazing. And seriously, just taking a half hour to read her 3 articles on science for a non-scientist like me, it's amazing. But it also really impressed the scientists. And the kids, you know, I got a couple of my kids to read it. And that's really enlightening to them as well. So I think it is very important that we not be elitist. You know, the IQ, if you will, of our writers is, I would imagine, is far higher than any other newsroom on the planet. But we don't write like technical jargon. We write in a way that people can actually understand these important issues, because we understand how important education is and context.
I love it. And again, to me, it comes back to accessibility. Is I might be an engineer. I might have that kind of, you know, intellectual or education, but it's not necessarily in that field. And I think when it comes to being able to articulate a language to the public, the more we can create a general understanding of certain words, because I know when it really does come down to marketing. For a lot of these concepts and ideas, it really does come down to the words that they use and the words that they choose to use in order to make it sensationalized instead of, if you want to call it factual and or on a kind of systemic platform that everybody can access to it. So I know our people are going to want more from you. How do they get a hold of you? How do they start their journey with you? Where do they get a hold of the paper?
it's a news platform. It's all online, and it's at big
paper
dash big-media.ca. So that's nice. Big and then the hyphen media.ca. If you just type in the words big and media in a search engine, you should come up with us. And nice. That's part of our design as well, that calling the company Big Media might sound counterintuitive, but it means a few things. One, we're covering the big issues, and two, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, because we're not big yet, but we want to show the big media players how journalism actually should be done, and we would love to see them copy us to some degree and actually start covering these issues with more integrity and more accuracy. Haven't seen it. And not to say that there aren't great journalists out there doing great work, but it's hard to find them now. And oftentimes these great journalists are forced to go independent now if they actually want to do their own work. And so you might find them on Substack or something. Anyway, it's for us, the site is where it all happens. And they'll be able to find contact information for me. We love it when people sign up as members. That's how we fund our business. We do not accept, and this is in order to preserve our editorial objectivity, we don't accept advertising, sponsorship, or government funding. And it truly is about knowledge. We might have an article that 120 people read, and I'm not going to cry. And we might have article that has thousands of reads, but for us, it's that what's paramount is that it be accurate and informative. And everybody who reads our articles, the news articles in particular, some of you will enjoy my humor articles, some of you maybe not, but the news articles, everyone will.
Humor is subjective, I will give you that.
Yeah, but the news articles by my team, everybody will take away something new, and that's pretty cool.
I guess it's objective. Clearly I'm not a journalist, so I other than members, is there any connections that you're looking for, anything that if somebody listening to this right now could kind of be your fairy godmother and grant you a wish, is there anything else that you're looking for in particular?
Really just subscribers slash members and writers. We are evolving to be a global platform, and I want to recruit writers all around the world. And you know, we're not going to pay them enough to fly to Mars, but they'll be able to buy a whole bunch of Mars bars. And hopefully that's good enough. But no, it's really important work. And there are people around the world, they're mostly scientists, but they don't have to be scientists, but they're people who are extremely intelligent, who know how to write in a way that is not overly technical, and who can write to our very tight guidelines of not using spin and showing all our work and still making it interesting. So
love it.
Writers and members.
Love it. For those of you who don't know what a Mars bar is, it's a Canadian chocolate bar.
Good point.
Awesome. Rob, you have been absolutely awesome. I do get to ask you before I go there is, at what point in life did you know you were special kind of crazy enough to think that you could become an entrepreneur?
Oh, wow. I think when I was around 25, 26, I was helping the bosses a little too much. And same with sports. I had to become a coach because I had too much to say and the coaches didn't like it. And the bosses didn't like it either. And especially in the news industry, I was a big pain in the ass because I actually wanted it done right. I had great pride, and I started as a newspaper carrier. And I guess that's what it was, grade five, delivering newspapers, the Calgary Herald. You know, I had to collect the money back then. Like, you had to go door to door and you had to be sneaky because some people tried to avoid you. And it was a real game, but I was good at it. And you know, I didn't make any money unless I collected. And so I became an entrepreneur in grade five.
Nice. I love it. Like I said, you've been absolutely awesome. Any last words for our peeps?
Oh, thanks for paying attention. And keep in mind, I know some of you are going to completely disagree with what I said, and I'd love to hear from you. It's all about having a constructive conversation and growing. And I know I've got plenty of room to grow.
Awesome. I love it. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. And I know how valuable it is.
Thank you, Michelle. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Peeps, this is Michelle Nedelec. Thank you for being here with us today. Be sure to subscribe to the show and share it with your friends. We love helping entrepreneurs grow.
Are you running a business over seven figures but still struggling with technology headaches? Pay attention. You do not want to miss this offer. This podcast episode is brought to you by Awareness Strategies, who is offering a custom-built digital adoption roadmap for anyone running a business over seven figures who's wanting to grow their business in the next 5 years. And it's not just a roadmap. They offer full implementation as well. If that scares the out of you, check out awarenessstrategies.com/roadmap for more details today. The link's in the show's notes. Don't regret not doing this. Do it now. That's awarenessstrategies.com/roadmap.